think that we might just start with the standing where we are.
All right.
Bruce.
I'm Bruce Bells. I'm from Los Angeles, California, USA. Let's see. Primarily these days, I'm into convention bidding and convention running and that sort of thing. I'm usually some sort of officer in the local science fiction club in Los Angeles, Los Angeles Science Fantasy Society, in polite terms. I have also an interest in the history of fandom. Please stop down the exhibits and take a look at the various history exhibits. There's one on convention bidding, one on the Worldcon, one on fanzine. I have probably the largest fanzine collection in the world, if I could just have time enough to put it in order. And beyond that, I occasionally keep up a mundane job as a librarian. Over to you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
I'm Justin Eckhoff. I'm from Melbourne, in Australia. I've been active in fandom since 1975 at IZCon, the first world science fiction convention to go to Australia. Nowadays I've been, well, I'm self-employed as a bookseller specialising in science fiction, fantasy, horror, mystery, anything, and living part-time in a bookstore. Get the extra money coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Active in conventions, unactive in doing fanzines. That's about all, really.
Oh. What fanzines can you name?
What fanzines can I name? Unactive.
Unactive?
Yeah, I've never produced a couple of those, so that's it. So, convention fan.
Convention fan, yeah.
And
Mark.
We haven't written yet.
No, yes, but I'm a moderator, I'm not.
My name is Mark Leeper. I consider myself to be a little name fan. I've been active in fandom since 1969, when I started going to Boscones. I am one of the two people who run the AT&T Science Fiction Club, and as a result, we put out what is one of what I now understand is one of only very few, at one point I thought it was the only, weekly fanzine. We do a lot of reviewing, our writing, also, the other person who runs the club is Evelyn Leeper, who's sitting out here. Hugo nominee for her writing. Our writing also appears predominantly in Land's Lantern, and on Unix Usenet, which is an electronic bulletin board.
Mm. Right. Valdemar.
Yeah. My name is Valdemar Kumink, and I'm probably the oldest here. I'm 66. For that reason, my stay in fandom has been much longer than anybody else. I've got my fandom goes back 35 years, and that was about the time German fandom was founded. And reading science fiction, I actually started as a boy reading Jules Verne. I've been president of the Science Fiction Club of Germany, which still exists. There are quite a number of people from that here for two terms. And I also always tape records all the congregations from the Science Fiction Club Deutschland it has been grown to quite a number of recordings, of course. That's my own, that's my first interest. And my second interest is going to science fiction conventions. And so I've been to a number of Worldcons, I think that is my seventh.
Yours? Sorry.
You're right.
Maya. I'm Leo Kind. I've been active since 1965, and this year we have in Holland this science fiction club, NCSA, which is has been founded back in 1965. So we at this convention we are celebrating our 25th anniversary, which is quite something to achieve. And this is a club and event in Holland, which was a club scene, which has also appeared 24 years. It's still existing, which makes it some of the better, the older fanzines in the world. Still going strong. Well, the last decade or so, I've not been so active. I've just been drawn into this convention like so many other Dutch fans. But okay, I'm doing this job, and I'm enjoying it. One of the things I would like to say is which came up to me is that what I have learned in fandom is that to be serious is deadly. So you have to. To laugh at what you're doing and keep it nice for yourself, otherwise you go down.
You should speak to the microphone.
Speak to the microphone.
Should be better. Otherwise,
the recording goes. Okay. Is that better?
Yes.
So incidentally, if you want to come to the program item, which is devoted to the celebration of the 25th anniversary. That's on next Sunday in the convention. We're going to have the slideshow of Farin Ackerman with the highlights of my life, as he's called it. And you're welcome to come. What we're going to do with this panel, I thought we just might say something funny or something provoking. The most provoking thing I could imagine myself was to say that I do not want to be serious anymore. And I hope this would just pick up some, provoke some response from my partners in this panel. Bruce, what about being serious?
I agree with you wholeheartedly. If you're serious about something, it's deadly.
Yeah.
Many people are, and when I find I'm getting serious about something, I figure I'm in trouble.
Uh-huh.
And I usually am.
Right, trouble.
And every time I get serious about things, I'm in trouble.
Yes.
Sometimes I'm in trouble when I'm not being serious about things, but that is at least fun.
Right. Could you name an example of what you're...
Well, let's see. There was a time that we gave an award to a particular author, and it had a joke hidden in it. It was an acrostic.
Uh-huh.
It worked out. It was doing fine until I made a mistake of telling the wrong person about it, who promptly ran and told the author, and all hell broke loose for lying. That particular author was extraordinarily annoyed and came and made a big stink. And the other people who had gone along with it in the first place made us give him a real one without that on it.
Uh-huh.
No sense of humor. So I got in trouble for that when I wasn't being serious.
So.
Didn't give much away, did you?
Hmm?
Didn't give much away, did you?
Well, that was the idea. Because I'm hoping to pull it again sometime.
Like this?
Yes, actually, if I can get away with it. But he'll probably be cautious the next time. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. You're jumping into this kind of thing.
Well, there's lots of opportunities for amusement, for humor, for entertainment, not at anyone's expense,
uh-huh.
really. And sometimes, at your own expense, can be the funniest, if you can recognize it. If you can't, well, then you're being serious again, and you're in trouble, aren't you? I don't have any other specific examples to give, but in general, I find humor to be something that I prefer to achieve.
Mm. Justin, you have any agree to this?
Well, the guy became serious about everything. It's going to be probably the last time we call the science fiction. I work, I basically live it, so I've got to laugh at it.
Yes.
Little instances like helping run World Science Fiction Convention and getting a phone call out of closing a deal room at 6 o'clock saying, please help save the Hugo ceremony. Because the guy had never started putting the slides in projector. Wow. And lovely typos like press enter or press enter. And again, it's the system of how to set the slides in. It came out all wrong. It was marvelous. Okay, probably annoyed me a little bit at the time. I was frustrated, but I saw the funny side of it. I was sitting behind the chair and telling him where the mistakes were coming next.
I wonder what that was. Okay.
More.
Well, it's hard for me to come up with anything. Usually what I do is I start, you know, serious.
You are.
And then go on. Okay. Yeah, most of what I write is sircon, if it's science fiction. I also write stuff that is semi-humorous, that is not connected to the science fiction. But I don't actually have anything prepared or just anything quickly come to mind.
Mm.
So I think I'm going to pass the mic, be a coward.
Okay.
The thing is, I believe in being serious and not being serious has all its own time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, let's talk about this, for instance, about preparing these world conventions. You have to be serious about that.
To some extent,
I absolutely agree with you. But if you are all doing it in a fun way, then you'll end up with a lot of money missing.
You've got experience with that, though. You've got experience.
No, I haven't got the
money missing.
Fortunately, I haven't managed a pawn yet, so I haven't got the, what I wanted to add to, because you brought in your fanzine publishing. I also publish a fanzine and have been for more than 30 years, which is called Munich Roundup. And in fact, the photographs from that, or most of the photographs, about 80%, which I could still get hold of, are down in the cellar in the house.
Mm.
Mm.
Okay. But what would make you into a big name fan?
That's probably because I managed to drive the German club for about 6 years, and at that time it was very difficult to get anything done. There were a lot of names which are in theory responsible for it, and practically it fell all to myself and to somebody who put out the fanzine for the club, who wasn't even on the list. Nowadays it's quite different, but for that time I did my work, came home and did my work for the club, including Saturdays and Sundays.
Okay.
Leo, why don't you ask possibly the audience as to
what do they think
of being big name fans,
yes,
supposed to be?
Yes, okay.
Because what is defining it is very difficult,
yeah,
but impossible.
Yeah.
What?
I haven't been involved in science fiction long enough.
No. So So you're not also being considered as, you don't think yourself that you are.
No,
so why have you been asked anyway?
Anne-Marie, she dubbed me in.
Ah.
They are not serious.
Well, anybody has got a suggestion about what's it like? Why?
I'm George. That question might be, do big name fans really exist?
Sorry?
Do big name fans really exist?
Oh, yes. And well, they are, is there a list of them?
If they exist, do they know that they're big name fans? Are there a bunch of people who are just perceived as being big name fans or not?
No. Oh. Some will definitely have that.
Those are more difficult. And why should it matter? You know, what is a big name fan? Somebody who pays, supposedly pays the same amount as anybody else to get to the convention.
What's the difference without a fan?
What's the difference between being a main fan or just a fan?
Yeah. Kicking out more than any other.
I'm sure everyone knows somebody who's been in fandom for 30 or 40 years and still outside his or her own little area. Nobody knows who they are. They certainly couldn't be considered a big main fan.
Yeah.
So I guess you at least have to be active outside your own local area?
Yes. Well, does that take me, for instance? I'm most well known here in this country, and I've been to many foreign conventions, but I'm sure nobody in the USA knows me or Australia.
Certainly knows you very well.
Yeah.
But Mark is going to cause a problem on this sort of thing with his bulletin boards as to people being milling in all sorts of places.
There are differences, I think, between fandom and fandom, in that somebody who has been, I would distinguish between somebody who is active in the social life of science fiction. There is actually a science fiction subculture that puts on conventions, as opposed to somebody who is, as you say, in their own little circle.
Mm-hmm.
And has remained and has been in their circle for a time, but really what they do is they read the stuff and they like it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the traditional definition of a fan. But fandom is something separate from that. Fandom is the subculture that tends to go to science fiction conventions, that does a lot of partying. And usually when you talk about a big name fan, you don't mean in the traditional sense of fan, you mean somebody who's associated with the social life of fandom.
Right.
Do you include fanzines in the social life? Or?
Yes.
Good.
Definitely would.
Because I would. You agree? Yes.
Oh, yes.
They become an important part of it.
There are a number of people who have been called big name fans whose primary function was to produce fanzines for years and years. They hardly ever go to conventions, even now.
Mm-hmm.
Such as? In the States, Harry Warner comes to mind immediately. I think he's been to maybe two conventions. The Coulsons, who publish Yandro, go to local conventions and nothing else. If it depended on conventions and social life, they live out in the boondocks, they wouldn't be anywhere. But still, I believe that I'm reasonably safe in saying that these people are regarded in the state fandom as big name fans.
What did you want to say about your...
But the electronic bulletin boards just set up another definition of local. In the case of electronic bulletin boards, local means anybody who has access to an electronic bulletin board. Right. And that, so you're known geographically in a wide area, but not in some other sense in a wide area. In other words, the people in Sweden who have access to this stuff will know Mark or me or somebody. And the people in Sweden who don't have access won't. And it's sort of orthogonal to the geography.
Yes, sir.
I like the idea of local being other than geographic.
Uh-huh.
Somebody who's known only in fanzines might not really be a big name fan. You'd at least have to get into the people who do both to get to be known as a big name fan. Now, where does that leave Warner?
The question is, do a large number of people know Warner's name connected with science fiction activity?
Well, maybe not.
If not, then he could very well not be a big name fan. Although it's hard to believe that there are that many I know the name Warner from some of the publications, but...
possibly he'd be known as a historian, and as such, that would get him outside the locality of fanzines.
Is Brooking a locality, for example?
Oh, yes.
Costuming
is a locality. Filkington is starting to become three to several localities. If you only do one particular kind of filking, you don't associate with the other kinds.
Mm-hmm.
Do you consider Scott to be part of fandom?
Oh,
what? There you go.
It's not a creative anachronism.
Oh, yes.
These are the people who put on jousts and medieval fighting, and I've
known
other groups who were into dancing.
Well, it started in fandom, 1966 in Berkeley. In fact, there was a fanzine report the week after the society had its first get-together, not even as a society, but from what became the society, there was a fanzine report of it from Police Wolfen, I believe, maybe in Michigan also. So whether it's still a part of fandom is an interesting question.
Some of these things occasionally get spawned off and become a separate fandom entirely.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if Wargame started out in science fiction fandom, but I knew that there was a big overlap at one point, and now there seems to be less of an overlap, and the activities don't overlap. A lot of the science fiction people are also into gaming, but they've sort of separated off and they have their own conventions. You don't see as much gaming at science fiction conventions as you used to.
That's on a convention.
Which ones still have a lot of gaming? Not to put you on the spot, but...
Depends also on what you call a lot, because the West Coast's regional convention, WesterCon, pays a fair amount of attention to as many of the sub-localities, if you will, as possible, so there's always at least several rooms of gaming. Several rooms for the filkers, an alley for the fanzine publishers.
In other places, there are several conventions which range across the spectrum in emphasis on different areas.
Justin, how would you fit into this picture?
Probably the best way I would fit into the picture is by turning up conventions in countries other than Australia, so frequently.
Uh-huh.
1979, I came across in Tennessee Con, 1994, and one of what's known as the Get Up and Over Fan Fund, Guff, which sent me to Easter Con in 1984 at Brighton, the European convention, and I continued traveling as a sort of Guff representative for 8 months, going to conventions in Sweden, Holland, Canada, USA, and England, Scotland, and then back in time to Hong Kong and Australia.
Sure, not in your, you don't enjoy local reputation anymore?
Judging from some of the stories that come back to me, no.
What kind of stories? Tell me.
1984, I think it was Dane Siegel wrote up a little article in the Daily Newsletter saying, by far the most vicious parties of the night were the three Australians, Jack Irvin, Kerry Hanfield, and Jason Ackroyd, who jumped into the jacuzzi after smearing their bodies with Vegemite. What a pure fabrication. All three of us had no memory of it.
Did at least give you some ideas for things to do in the future.
Well,
yeah, who's going to bring that much Vegemite?
She was in the jar I was carrying.
Maybe I shouldn't.
Also becoming agents for conventions, and that will be brought up in a later program, I don't know.
Well, that's very serious, huh? The agent.
It is to a degree. I make sure that the particular members get treated the way I feel I should be.
Do you have to make clear that
I didn't bring over the conspiracy finances until this year because I haven't delivered the program books until about 4 months ago. So I protected the membership by not transferring the money.
Uh-huh.
If there's problems, I'll try and fix them up, but it won't be a communication business. Tony Bezos is pretty nasty.
David,
money.
Is
not
really
money.
Money.
Yeah,
money. that's quite a lot. It's cost me quite a lot to do this, but I try to give you some sort of form of notice as we mentioned. I've been here for 3 years now, I think. So if Hawaii or anything through for me, I think that would be. That's a good chance, actually. I've got the Hawaii.
Not for me! I have to keep assuring people that what Hawaii did is not me. And in fact, except for the lunatic in Los Angeles who originated the Hawaii bid.
He is, yes. He's pretty old man.
And the other person who needs to be the keeper to that particular lunatic, nobody else in Los Angeles is on that bidding committee. Nobody. We are busily working for 1996. So that's why I have to keep saying this all the time. But you do a lot more traveling to overseas conventions than most of the statesiders, certainly.
Yeah. It's easy enough for anyone in the US to get to 10, 15, 20 conventions a year, but over much.
But does that actually get your name around, or how does that make you a big name fan? Or does it?
It doesn't.
I just turn up at conventions and people go, no, I'm not you again.
But it's jumping in the jacuzzi that made him a big name fan.
It was the splash in the bread and water.
Dana Siegel.
Yeah, so like.
Well, we seem to be, you know, have different people who have different ways of, you know, of being. Becoming big name fans. Now you. You're the classic. I mean, you're somebody who started 35 years ago and has been, you know, organizing people. And but you've had, to some extent, the disadvantage in that I guess there has not traditionally been, or has there? Have there traditionally been a lot of contacts between German fandom and fandom in, you know, throughout the rest of Europe?
At first, not. To some extent, I brought that in because I knew English, which was at that time was quite rare in Germany. Actually, when was it? 65 or so. Quite a number of English fans came over to Germany, and that was a start.
Was there a lot of science fiction written in Germany in post-war years?
That's a very good question. Most of the time it was translated. People believed that no German could write any science fiction. That was wrong, of course, but the people who selected the books believed that. And in fact, that was a time when all the German authors used English sounding pseudonyms. I think the most famous of that is Clark Dalton, which was actually named Walter Ernsting. And he brought in the book, he was editor of one of the science fiction series which came then out, not as books, but I'm not sure you got the name for it in English. It was larger than books, but still it was less than a book. And he got that, well, at that time they were using mostly English authors of certain fourth ranks, not the top ones, because they were too expensive. And he thought, well, I could write a story at least as good as that. Which he could, but he couldn't get it published. Yeah. So he dusted it off, typed a new title page to it, which I think it wasn't even proper English. It was we against time or something like that. went again to the chief editor and said, look, I just got this thing and I liked it so well, I translated it. Oh yes, the chief editor looked at it and it was accepted. And he did a few more of that, and by that time the secret sort of had leaked, but by then he was an established name in German.
Germany lose its prominence in science fiction. I mean, I'm sure that it was thought all along that they were technical. My field is more film than literature almost. And if you look at films like Frau im Mund, which was way ahead of its time, it was,
yes, certainly.
And certainly Metropolis is considered to be a classic. I would assume that, like, in the 30s, people associated the science fiction film, the technical science fiction film, as much with Germany as with the United States.
You must remember that in the 30s, Germany fell under the rule of the Nazis.
Right.
But
it seems to me it was still technical. Even under the Nazis, it was still technical. Politically, people might not have agreed with what was going on in Germany, but I think that people still accepted Germany as the leading technical power at the time.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. there was quite a number of German science fiction books come out after 1933, but as the years passed on, it became even always more difficult to write it. At the start of the World War II and during World War II, it practically it came to pass that all the good things were done by Germans, or possibly by Japanese, or just maybe by Italians, but nobody else. And of course, I'm not saying that the writers believed that, but they couldn't get their work published unless they put that in.
Okay, so it was politically influenced.
And after the war, at first science fiction, well, it wasn't called science fiction before the war, of course, it was called Zukunftsroman.
What does that mean in English?
Future woman.
Future novel.
Future novel. Science fiction was a term that came in much later, years later, after the war. The Rauch Verlag did try to start that again with four novels, which were all not written by Germans. They were. But they fell flat on their faces.
Okay.
And then it was starting up with Jim Parker series and so on. And now we are in quite a good position to, at least in Europe. Not including England, of course, where there is quite a bit of Americans.
I should like to make a turn in the whole discussion, because otherwise we are talking about Germany only, and probably we
can
okay,
right.
We're learning something.
Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to finish anyway. This has been a complete new start, actually. At first, as I say, it was only English and American authors that got something, and only later German authors came in. So.
Yes?
Yes, that after that.
Okay. Yeah. I just came up, came just another, because we're talking about being name fans and so on. What I should like to know is whether being a fan, how much does it affect your daily life, Justin?
It can be a bit of a grind occasionally, but generally, because I'm in the book trade, it doesn't really affect me because I'm involved with nearly all
the time.
It's just finding enough time to do everything.
Do you ever get away from it?
There was a nice week in Wales that Jenny and I just had.
Yes, and your wife felt better. It's very difficult for her.
It is difficult because there's basically three bedrooms and it's full of books and no, it's always around.
That's like
working from home as well. So working strange hours like 9 till midnight, 9 till 3 in the morning, tucking Jenny into bed and saying goodnight.
It's not too bad because, I mean, people are not on the phone all the time. It's more you find people at conventions and you know a lot of people.
Yeah. By having a business, I get to meet even more people. Some get involved with conventions eventually, I'm sure. Other than go to the conventions. So it's sort of using myself as sort of news point, it seems, to be at times. Feels as though sometimes I feel a bit of obligation to do specific things all the time. I've got to turn
up. Do you enjoy those?
Generally, I enjoy it.
Oh.
If I didn't enjoy it, I wouldn't be doing it.
Oh, you have a choice then, you make.
Yeah.
Oh. What about you?
Well, yes, I find time to do things other than fandom. A lot of it has to do with travel, which both my wife and I like to do very much. And
where to, for instance?
Well, we just came on the way here. We've took a week to take a ride cruise, which was very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
We've been to England several times. This is only the first time my wife has been to continental Europe, and only the second for me. People can probably guess what the first one was.
Yeah.
20 years ago. But we do a lot of traveling, and my job, as far as I'm concerned, ends when I leave work, and I do fairly regular hours. Uh-huh. Hers doesn't. She's in a position where she works odd hours, but we work around it quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to go to more of these United States conventions than my wife does. Because I have a better schedule, I get more free time than she does.
Mm-hmm.
But I tend occasionally to think that the non-fan stuff gets worked around the fan stuff rather than the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
They talk in chaos theory about the butterfly effect, that is one butterfly landing on a flower affects everything eventually. It just spreads out in circles wider. I guess Rick Bradbury's Sound of Thunder, I think, was written on the idea, I think, long before the term the butterfly effect was coined. And I think that being a fan, saying the found the club, has, in the same way, it started relatively small and it now has some effect on everything that I do, with the possible exception of the work itself. I mean, I look around at my friends, and they're all people who are in the science fiction club. I met them through the science fiction club or through science fiction in some form. We also travel a lot. But in the back of my mind, I think the reason that I travel is because where we travel, we don't generally travel to Europe. This is an exception. We'll try and go to non-Western cultures to see how cultural changes and things that are different cultural assumptions will manifest themselves in the part of society. And I think that comes out of the science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I originally went into the technical work was because I fell in love with the original movie, The Fly. You know, this idea of, you know, a scientist who goes down in his basement and comes up with these marvelous things. When his end comes, it's like classical tragedy,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, he reached too far, he overreached himself,
And I found that, you know, that influenced me. That's what, you know, that was why I went to technical things.
Yeah. But do you ever do something else than science fiction?
There are times when I consciously do something other than science fiction.
Like what?
But, like what? Like take care of the house? Like, as I say, there aren't a whole lot of activities I do that, a lot of them would be perceived outside, like the travel would be perceived outside as not being science fiction related.
But it is.
But deep down, I think that I'm in it because I'm the science, I'm a science fiction fan, yes. And the same things that interested me in science fiction interest me, in the world around us. Mm. It's the same sort of approach. Mm. So it would be very difficult.
Do you think I'm looking by different eyes then?
I think
comparison with non fans.
I don't think I am. I don't think I'm intentionally doing that. Mm. But
it's your nature.
Yeah, but I think that that's a science fictional approach that I take to an awful lot of the things I do. Mm. A lot of the I'm also interested in reading history.
Mm. Oh yes, that's for instance. That's for me.
And again, it's picturing, the times and seeing how the time, how something in this time affected something else, which is, again, thinking of streams and, as would be discussed in science fiction. So it's difficult, really, to say how much that, how much there is of my time that is not actually affected by the fact that I'm a science fiction man. I've also got one of these houses that has half a bedroom and 8 libraries. Mm. And basically every room of the house is full of books. And only a couple of them are science fiction, but all of them are in related subjects in some way. If I'm interested in literature, it's literature that's connected. Yeah. That I originally got interested in because of the science fiction and then got an interest in other fields or cinema. I initially got interested in because I wanted more science fiction stories and science fiction movies and then got into lots of them. So it's difficult really to draw a line.
But I think there's four of us who were at least who travel a lot then. Mm-hmm. It seems to be some point of comparison.
Perhaps because we see, if you travel at all in science fiction fandom, you meet all sorts of people who tell you about where they're from. And even if it's you just travel a little, travel in your own country, still there's parts of my own country I haven't seen yet.
For me.
Do you see travel as being, I've made an argument that I see travel as being science fiction related in that, let's start with a Gwynne-esque thing where if you twiddle with the assumption, how is the society going to be different? Do you think of travel in that sense, or do you think of travel just in terms of an activity the way most people would think of it?
I'm afraid I think of it as an activity the way most people would think of it, Mark. I suspect you're probably right, but I've just never thought of it that way.
I'm now starting to think of travel as a business expense. Mm.
I'd love to think of travel as a business expense.
Yeah, well, okay, I've been writing most of this up as a tax deduction, so it makes it a lot easier for me to travel. Mm. Hopefully, it means I can continue to explore travel. I actually have made a bit of a mistake. Well, I do have something other than science, which is for a place called, I watch school. I'm a sports addict.
Mm-hmm.
I play hockey.
Oh, you do? Yeah.
I don't know, I've never seen the connection with science fiction.
Yeah, that's right. No connection whatsoever.
I just never got interested in it.
Yeah. I've been involved with it longer than I have been with science fiction.
But traveling as a means to see foreign or other cultures, or other places at least, is connected with the idea of science fiction, I think.
I think in my own mind it is. I think when we went to China,
You went there?
Yes, we did go to China in 82.
It's completely different.
And I know.
Not exactly, completely different.
The travel agency that we went with is now sending us brochures saying you wouldn't recognize China. They're running around in Adidas running shoes, and you'll be fascinated to see how China's changed. I'm saying, nah, then it's becoming too much the same. I really want something alien. I'm reaching for something alien. And when I make a trip, that's what I want, is something that is different from what I've seen before.
So you don't go and look for the next McDonald's restaurant?
No. I've never met a cuisine I didn't like. I definitely do not look for or something like that. What I generally look for is as much different as possible. I'm eating a lot of Indonesian restaurants here because you can't find those in the United States.
We'd eat in Dutch restaurants if we could find any.
Pancake houses.
Aren't any. We haven't any.
It's like Scotland. We couldn't find any Scottish restaurants.
No.
National cuisine of Scotland is tandoori, I think.
Our best national food is Indonesian.
In Scotland, in the far north, you can get a good haggis.
We couldn't find any place that would serve us traditional Scottish. I mean, it could be that there was...
Edinburgh, Glasgow, Inverness.
Ullapool.
Ullapool is as far north as we go.
But there is a German cuisine.
Yeah.
Sauerkraut. And so on.
Which practically in heaven.
So again with cuisines, and not to to belabor the point again, but it's to see how different things can be and still consider them to be food.
Try an Australian hamburger.
An Australian hamburger.
Yes.
Well, I've always had the contention that the countries that used to be of the British Empire and the United States, countries that used to be British seem to love hamburgers, and Americans love candy, and they really should exchange with each other how to make it, because Americans don't know how to make candy.
This is a marketing idea. Why don't you sell it?
That's not how to make chocolate.
But the British don't make it.
But the British hamburger is not very good.
We have always got a dozen to eat chocolate, what do you say, goodies. Because we think the Belgians make better goodies.
Disagree.
Thank you.
I'm perfectly willing to take about an hour's worth of testing to find out.
Schedule that tasting panel for later in the convention.
We can check Dutch and Belgian and Swiss.
Yeah.
Chocolate.
Yeah. That would be a good comparison.
Just
to have it. Well, we have this beer contest. We can make chocolate contest.
Is there a beer contest?
Oh, they don't, but there used to be.
Nice coders. Oh, well.
Okay, sure, we might not.
Yeah, that's why, right? Really is that nice.
Any question? Yeah, well, they have numbers again. What's the time when we get at the beat?
But how many of you are
going to be the one the panelists outnumber the audience, they should have the right to turn the table and say, it's now the audience that has to present.
Well,
we'll sit back and watch.
We have
been asking questions to the audience, so they have the right to ask questions. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.